tea. Drink Lion's tea. Love Lion's tea. Lion's the quality tea. Freshly packed and full flavored. Lion's the quality tea.
Now then, who's for tea?
Me, please, Mrs. Doyle.
Tea! Thick!
I'm fine, Mrs. Doyle.
You won't have a cup.
Ah, no, thanks, Mrs. Doyle. Honestly, I won't have a cup.
Are you sure now it's hot?
No, I'm not in the mood, thanks.
All right, so. I go on, would you not have a drop?
No, thanks anyway,
just
Mrs.
A
Doyle.
Cup.
I'm fine. No, really.
I'll tell you what, Father. I tore
seriously.
A cup for you.
Ah!
And you can have it if you want. Now.
Ireland's obsession with tea goes back a long time, all the way back to our colonial days, most likely. And despite the Celtic tiger rise of green teas, alternative teas, tea infusions and so on, the traditional cup of scald, as they call it down the West, did you know that? Still rules the roost. Actually, I think most of us have had have you ever had the Lions versus Barry's debate at some stage?
Oh, yeah.
Of course you have. It's a debate that confuses my next guest. In fact, our fascination with the little act of putting a few black leaves into a cup of hot water, mixing them with a little milk and sugar, and suddenly being at peace with the world, actually leaves him completely perplexed. And that's not the only thing that mystifies this man about the Irish. Why do we prefer rugby and soccer over our native Gaelic games? Blonde's mouth is wide open. What's with the whole Eurovision thing? On this programme, that's sacrilege. Anyway, his name is Larry Donnelly. He's a native of Boston, which you won't be able to escape, Massachusetts. He has dual Irish and American passports, and he's a law lecturer at NUI Galway and a columnist at thejournal.ie. Larry Donnelly, thanks for coming into the Galway studio today.
Good to be with you.
How are you? What's the weather like in Galway?
The weather's gorgeous, and there's a great race week vibe throughout the city. It's fabulous.
I love your accent.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Sorry, is that mean
you must get
me?
That all the time,
that's,
Larry.
See, oftentimes, with all due respect to Blonde, it gets overplayed. That's more a New York accent than a Boston accent.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's you slapped
straight
out.
Oh, my God,
that's
a real slap.
You see, that's a lawyer. That's the lawyer
in him. Probably another Irish thing you can't.
Larry, tell us a little bit about yourself. You are a lawyer from Boston, Massachusetts. How did you end up in Ireland?
Well, I was practicing law in Boston from 1999 to 2001, and I was doing insurance defense work, not exactly the most glorious or glamorous line of work, and I decided to come back over here and spend some time, and I came for a year, and lo and behold, here I still am 13 years later, now with an Irish wife, who you probably know, I think most of the nation knows, is Eileen Whelan from the RT Newsroom, and two kids, Sean and Larry.
Yes, we have heard of her in this parish here. She's a great friend, a brilliant, and you know, she's an icon, really. Everybody knows her. I'm sure it must be hard to be mobbed all the time and stand aside and say, let it all happen with Eileen there. You just stand to one side, you and the kids.
Well, I have to say that the column I wrote for thejournal.ie, a lot of the points I made were with her directly in mind, and a lot of the little squabbles that we constantly have in our lives.
You, we'd all like to think that you were in America, in the States, like The Practice or one of these legal dramas, condemning criminals or defending criminals and speaking to the judge and histrionics and walkouts. Was it like that in your career?
It wasn't. No, I did a lot of premises liability work, a lot of kind of slip and falls and those kinds of things, and defending against those kind of claims. So I had, you know, I worked with wonderful people and wonderful lawyers who taught me a lot about law practice and about life. But ultimately, the law practice wasn't for me. Legal academia really was where I found my calling. And again, Ireland has been the land of opportunity for me. And it's strange to hear that when you think of how many Irish people have gone to the U.S. over the years, my own family included. I've really had the kind of inverse relationship to that. So, you know, when I write a column like I wrote, my 10 kind of pet peeves, that doesn't do anything to diminish just how much I love Ireland and how good it's been to me and how good the people of Ireland have been to me since the day and hour I set foot here.
And who called you and said, please come to Ireland, or did you just come on your own, or what was the reason you came here?
Well, it's interesting. I'd spent a lot of time here when I was a kid. We traveled over here a number of times, and I hadn't been then for many years, but I came over for a wedding to Galway in 2000 and had a wonderful, wonderful experience. And, you know, you alluded to Boston before, and if you know anything about Boston and Bostonians, we're pretty parochial people, to be quite frank with you, and we don't really think anywhere else in the world is as good as Boston. It was the first time I'd ever been away from Boston where I got back to Boston and I said, I wish I was somewhere else. And that somewhere else was Ireland and Galway in particular. I fell in love with the country then. And it wasn't just the party of the wedding, etc. It was the life, it was the lifestyle, it was the people, it was the place. And, you know, I still feel very much the same way as I did back then.
And where you, your job as we speak, what is it?
I'm a law lecturer in NUI Galway, and I direct a clinical legal education program, which I teach legal skills. A lot of people say to me, you're American, you're an American-educated lawyer. How do you teach law in Ireland? Well, I teach legal skills, legal research, legal writing, legal analysis, the critical tools that lawyers need to have, and indeed law graduates need to have no matter what they do. And I also direct our clinical legal education program, which kind of operates on the premise that, look, you wouldn't let a doctor operate on a patient if all he or she had done was study the books. Clinical legal education involves getting law students out there working with practitioners, with NGOs, with governmental bodies, and being evaluated actually on how they perform in the workplace, not on how they perform on an exam or in-class assessment. So it's an interesting job, and I love it.
How do Irish, sorry, Blooded.
No, I was just curious. There's a lot of performance, isn't there, in court, isn't that? I mean, you can win a case by being good at speaking publicly, but not necessarily knowing that much theory.
There's something to that. There's no question that in terms of people who are barristers and courtroom advocates, that having the rhetorical flourish, that being persuasive, all that it adds a lot to it. But at the end of the day, if the law isn't on your side, when you're litigating a case, and oftentimes we think about the courtroom, we think about that's where most legal disputes are resolved. The reality is there are a very, very small percentage of all legal disputes that are there. Most things get settled at a much earlier stage of resolution. So the practice of law involves advocacy, and yes, certainly the top courtroom advocates have that on their side. But there's a lot more to it than just that.
How do Irish legal graduates stack up from an international point of view, particularly from American? One thing we're very familiar with is American lawyers because of American television. I think we get the impression there's a lawyer on every corner in the United States, whether they're ambulance chasing or working in the corporate sphere. How do our graduates stack up?
I think our graduates stack up very well. I mean, the one crucial difference between Ireland and the U.S. is that in the U.S., law is a postgraduate discipline. You cannot do a law degree as a 17- or 18-year-old kid. You have to do an undergraduate degree first, then you do a 3-year degree, which is a doctoral degree. It's the same rank as a PhD would here. So that's one fundamental difference. That said, our law graduates and the people that we're bringing through, and indeed at NUI Galway, we had a number of students go over to Boston this past summer and acquitted themselves extremely well. So I would put our law graduates up against anyone in the world. And increasingly, law is an international thing. It's not just the traditional roots of you do a law degree, you become a solicitor, you become a barrister, and you practice in Ireland, whether in Dublin or in rural Ireland. A lot of our graduates are going overseas and they're competing and doing very well at the very highest levels. So I'd put our graduates up against anybody.
That's good. That's very good to hear. Now, let's talk about something slightly more frivolous, let's just say. You wrote an article for that wonderful publication, thejournal.ie, which there's a great app for if you have an iPhone or Android, or you can find it online. Good Irish website as well, and they cover international and national news. They have a bit of fun as well. And you decided there are 10 things that you just don't get about Ireland. Let's start with number 10. What is number 10? Property tax, would that be right?
Yes, yeah, property tax.
Why do you not get the property? Well, it's very simple.
It is very simple, and indeed, Ireland was one of the very few countries, I suppose, in the OECD that didn't have a property tax, of course, one has been introduced. But I did expect we get a little bit of value for our money in the sense that one of the things that's always infuriated me here is that people, they tend to do road works in the middle of the day. In the U.S., you would, people, there would be violence, and there would be carnage on the streets if you try to dig up a road on a Friday afternoon. They do these things, in the U.S., they do it between 3 and 6 in the morning because people aren't on the roads. And with the property tax, I thought maybe we might get some relief from that situation. But based on how many roadworks I see going on throughout the country, again, on Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock, we haven't gotten very much value for our money.
Fair point, actually.
Well, yes. I have to say, like, at the moment, Newlands Cross, just outside Dublin, many people will be familiar with Newlands Cross. They work through the night there, and when you wake up the next morning, the traffic has been in a completely different lane. So yes and no, but lads, I get up in the middle of the night to go to work to a rising time, and I can tell you it's not pleasant. So
yeah, but hold on a second. You go through Galway
yeah.
at 4 o'clock on a
yeah.
Friday.
Yeah.
It can be hectic. Galway is like crazy, especially at the moment. Galway races are on. So
remember Tuam when the hole was in the middle of the road for?
I actually agree with you on that
15 years.
Thanks, Blanet.
So that's a tick from Blanet. Of course, everything goes well in the States. Nothing ever goes wrong. Number 9, by the Irish love affair with New York City. You've already dissed New York City in your intro, Larry. So what's the problem with our love affair with New York City?
I can't help but do it. You know, if people who know Boston well or people who live there or spend time there, they'll know about our relationship with New York. And the only thing I can really compare it to in an Irish context is the relationship that Cork people have with Dublin. It's very much, you know, we're the real city and, you know, never mind you, even though you're a lot bigger. You know, look, I like New York. I like I like a lot of the people in New York. I won't say I like them all, but I like a lot of the people in New York. But what drives me nuts is that for a lot of Irish people, it's New York, New York, New York, New York, New York, and that's all they talk about. When, if you look 200 miles to the north, as I said in my column, you'll find a wonderful, wonderful city. Not that I'm biased, but a wonderful, a wonderful small city that I think a lot of the qualities that I suppose New York is lacking in, I would say that we have in spades. And I just think, look, they're two good cities, and I think the Irish emphasis on New York is one that just drives me nuts when I hear people always talk about New York and never talk about Boston. I think it flies in the face of the experience of so many Irish people who I know who live in the States or who are back here and say, look, at first I liked New York, then I went to Boston and wow, I fell in love with Boston. And that's the way I feel.
Hold on a second. You're bound to say that you're from, you just sounds like a bit of jealousy there if you don't want me saying
it. It's an inferiority complex.
There's no question.
Let it go. Build a bridge. I would say to you though, and this is a fact, you'd probably find more deals from Dublin to New York than from Dublin to Boston.
That's true.
So very often it's economical. Also, another thing is, a friend of mine said once, the only problem with Boston, too many Irish in it. There you go.
Yeah, there's no question about that is an issue. You know, one of the things that people say to me is you go to New York and you find a lot of Irish because you find a lot of everyone. You go to Boston, you find a lot of Irish.
It's true.
It's true. Now, number 8, the absence of sugar-free drinks from the country that brought sugar-free drinks to the world, Coca-Cola, made us all fat. And now you're saying you're giving out because we don't have the sugar-free versions.
Well, yeah, I mean,
what's the problem?
To me, it's crazy. Like, you know, tea has already been mentioned, but to me, I'd much prefer iced tea to hot tea. But you know, you have iced tea, you have Gatorade. Now that stuff it's great to have it here, you know. But why don't you have the low-calorie diet or, you know, very reduced calorie versions of those drinks? They're just as good and they have no calories. They don't make me even fatter than I should be, and they don't contribute to the obesity problem. I really wish that we had them here because I think they would fly off the shelves.
Do you think Gatorade, which is a drink for athletes who are high energy, which is actually consumed by small children sitting on the couch watching the telly, making them fat. You want the sugar-free version with a Cultsaflame and saccharin and all the additives in it.
I would agree though on choices. I mean, sometimes I'll go, I want a Coke and I want a Coke Zero and it won't be there. You know what I mean?
Club Orange Zero now.
Yeah,
zero,
but I don't know. I do know that teenagers just adore like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, all that. And I think more choices would make a difference. I haven't noticed it, but I'll give you that one, Larry.
I think
one thing that Americans, and I'm not bashing them, I love America. I have said I'm very fond, been there many times and recently spent some time with people from LA. That was an eye opener. But one of the things that when you walk into an American supermarket is the choice. It's mind boggling.
When I go home, I'm actually struck by that because it's not like a supermarket, it's more like a warehouse. And you know,
Walmart or one of the very large, Target, one of those big, big warehouse supermarkets. But I'm also struck by how much of the stuff that's there has been dug out of the ground and is going to be thrown in the ground. Just the choice is extraordinary. Sugar-free this, caffeine-free that, additives for that, non-free additives free, non-GMO, soya-fed, grass-fed.
You can go to a supermarket I remember going to a supermarket in LA once and I actually just went in to get, I can't remember, some basics and I saw a woman coming out with a fridge freezer in her trolley. I remember thinking, that's the most ridiculous thing ever. But it was fantastic.
What's she going to do when she's lifted onto the conveyor belt?
I have no idea. It was the maddest thing. I remember seeing that a long time ago now, but I remember thinking, wow.
Well, we have
wow.
that now. Have you been to Lidl and Aldi on a Monday and Thursday when
Larry's right. It's like a warehouse, isn't it? Supermarket's a warehouse.
Larry, I don't want to upset people. I think you have to give, you know, a warning before we talk about this. What's the problem with Eurovision? What's your problem with Eurovision?
It's horrible. It is just straightforward horrible. I mean, the fact is, the songs, to my mind, are invariably crap, and it's completely outdated. And look, you know, as I said in the column, we sent a mechanical turkey as our nominee several years ago. Doesn't that say just how irrelevant and foolish the whole damn thing is? If I was, and especially now that it's dominated by strategic pact voting in Eastern Europe, if I was on, just pull right out of it.
Actually,
you
don't know
on this particular program, which is loves Eurovision.
Yeah, I know it does, but Derek's not here. And you know what? Derek's not here, so hey, you know, I get what you're saying. I'm married to someone who totally would agree with you, but I can't but help on the night, get involved and pick a country, and I just love the crack.
We all love a bit of competition.
Yeah,
so that's
very relaxed about that one. Let it go.
I'm going to have a word with Eileen later. Ice famine. What ice famine?
Yeah, now, of all the points I raised in the column, this is the one that really, really, really drives me insane, is that when you're in a pub or you're in a restaurant, especially this summer where we've had warm weather, or last summer we had very warm weather, and you want a bottle of cider, or if you're having a Coke or whatever you're having, and you ask for extra ice, and they come out and bring you 3 or 4 cubes at the bottom of the glass. It's miserable. Ice is not expensive. We like drinks cold. When it's hot out, don't people like their drinks to be freezing cold? Why not give us the ice?
I'll give you that one.
I don't have a problem with what you're saying there, except when you go to maybe a fast food restaurant, they give you a thing full of ice and then just top it up with a soft drink. That annoys me because you get a watery drink then.
That's fair enough.
But if you get a sentimental bottle of cider or something like that.
But come here, with the water charges coming out, are you going to be charged for each ice cube now?
Well, it's a good question. I'd say if they could figure out a way to charge you, they would.
I love your accent,
Chad. Most commercial premises already have water meters, so they're already paying anyway. And we're lucky in Ireland that we have good water, that we can make ice from the water. Because if you're in Spain or if you're in other countries, you have to buy bags of ice, or the water has to be filtered.
Absolutely. Just make a lot more of it.
Just more. But you know what I do like, Larry, I have to say, is when you go in and the glass has been in the fridge.
Yes.
It's very extravagant, but yes. I like that.
Yeah,
that
and it's a small touch, but it's great.
Yeah, sometimes in beer fridges, they might open the thing.
Oh, that's if you drink beer. I drink vodka. Nobody...
You can keep that in the freezer, though. Vodka can be kept in the freezer.
That's very extravagant.
That's your kind of lifestyle, Blanet. Americans are loud, Irish are quiet. Now, explain that.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is, I suppose...
What's the problem with that?
Was partly in response to to what happened down in Waterville in County Kerry, you know, with the sign that one of the proprietors put up about...
So if you haven't heard this, explain, Larry, what this story was
well,
about.
Well, there's I think it's a cafe in Waterville, and the proprietor put up a sign that basically said, no loud Americans allowed, you know? And, you know, as I say in the column, you know, he has a point. We tend to be louder. I see it when my friends are over, you know, a couple of my friends in particular, they'll be loud. And I see it when I'm in a restaurant, you know, in Dublin or in Galway, and you hear Americans are there, and they're definitely louder and above the tone of the conversation and the rest of the place. However, one of the things I do notice, and again, this is a big bone of contention with my wife, is that oftentimes she'll be talking to me and I just have to tell her to repeat the whole thing because it's all murmured and it's so soft and I can't understand what she's saying.
In her
beautiful
job?
Irish lilt, and she has fabulous diction.
And she does have fabulous diction, but I suppose I'm used to people kind of speaking very loudly all the time. And maybe
well,
it's
go over there. Go over there.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm kind of used to. So I do. Again, it's a minor thing, but I do kind of wish sometimes that people would speak up. And it especially gets me sometimes. A lot of people have a tendency here, even when you're in a crowded space, or you know, to still speak at the same level, and you're desperately trying to hear them. You're saying ha ha. And they're still speaking at a very, you know, and again, I don't want Irish people to be loud or as brash as Americans, as I say in the column, but sometimes I do wish they would just kind of speak up a little bit.
Is it pace or volume? Are you sure we're not speaking faster?
No. I completely can get that, but it's volume. It's volume. I mean, I would kind of speak loud all the time. So, most people don't have a problem hearing me. But, I find over here a lot more people would speak at a much softer volume. And I maybe I'm going a bit deaf, but I can't hear them.
Well, there's that possibility as well.
I won't give you that one.
No, you're not. The Blondes.
That's
Blondes against that one. I have to say, I did spend some time with some Californians, and we do speak a different language because they wanted to go to a playground, so I brought them. There's a lovely park just outside Dublin near Newlands mm-hmm. Cross called Corky Park, mm-hmm. and there's a little pet farm. It's free there, and there's golf, and there's all beautiful, a fishing lake, and a little shop there. And I drove them in. They couldn't understand the concept that the playground was in the middle of the park, that you had to walk 15 minutes to get to the playground. Mm-hmm. They felt that in LA you'd pull up to a chain link fence, go through the metal detector, and you'd be in the playground. So they said to me, like, are you sure it's over there? And I went, ah, yeah, it's about over there somewhere. And they got very upset because I wasn't exact. I should have said, it's in that direction, in a northeasterly direction, and it'll take 7 minutes to get there. And then they would have been happy. So I think we do speak a different language, Larry, which could be a problem.
There's no question about that. Most of that I've got, you know, after 13 years, most of that I've got my head around. But I think the point still for me would be that people don't speak as loud. And maybe that's actually a good thing. Maybe we Americans are a little bit not self-aware enough and, you know, too loud, etc. So who knows?
Larry, let's finish with this one. The Irish obsession with tea, which is what we mentioned at the start. What is the problem with our obsession with tea? Is it because we don't drink tea cold, full of sugar, with a squeeze of lemon or cinnamon or whipped cream on top? Is that the problem? You Americans are obsessed with coffee.
Well, I'm sort of a strange kettle of fish altogether because I don't drink tea or coffee. But to me, it's just, and there's nothing harmful, as I say in the column, there's nothing harmful at all about tea, and it's actually quite nice that people love tea, but it is a very, very central part of life for so many people here, and I kind of just don't really get it. I mean, you know, for a lot of people, whether it's work, whether it's pleasure, whether it's, a tearful occasion, whether it's a joyous occasion, the cup of tea is in the center of all of that, and again, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. I just really don't get it.
Ah, Larry. Another 20 years, I think you will get it.
Yeah, he will get it in time. So Larry, your heart's been broken a few times.
Isn't Larry lovely, though? We like Larry.
We love Larry. I want to see a picture of Larry because he sounds great. You sound very handsome, Larry.
No, you'll be let down by
him. I'm obsessed with TV.
He's kind of a cross between Ned Flanders.
Larry, I don't agree. I'm looking at an image of you here. Larry, you look very handsome.
Well, thank you very much.
No problem. You sound, your voice is great.
Yeah, party at Harvard.
Yeah,
I have a face for radio.
Hello.
Larry Donnelly, a columnist with the journal.ie, also a law lecturer at NUI Galway. Thanks for joining us from the Galway studio.
My pleasure.
Bye, Larry.
Welcome back, Blondet. Wasn't he nice, Larry Donnelly? I really liked him.
I'd like to hear a little rant from Larry once a week.
A weekly rant.
A weekly rant.
Larry's
from
rant.
Larry.
Hi, Shane Blondet. The Boston accent is based on the Liverpool one, says Annie. Oh. Sorry. I spent 7 months in Boston and hated it. Came back to Dublin, says Mary.
Larry won't like that.
Larry, they say, what planet is this guy on? There's ample evidence to say that sugar-free drinks are contributing far more to obesity, plus the fact they use aspartame or saccharin, which are certainly in the loop for cancer problems. There you go. That's what someone else said. Larry isn't here to refute that, but as a lawyer, he may send me a letter. I've been to New York and Boston. Now I say I've done New York, but we'll go back to Boston. We're friendly, says Eilish. Have you been to Boston?
Never.
I haven't been. I've been to New York. I haven't made it as far as Boston. I think I'll have to. But see, Boston, the East Coast, you can walk around the streets. That's mm-hmm. the difference I found. The West Coast, LA, San Francisco, even Tennessee, you know, nobody walks anywhere. Florida, yeah. Nobody walks anywhere. There are very few pavements. Everybody drives everywhere. Whereas there are actual streets in these places. I remember going to Nashville, and then we went down to Memphis to see Elvis's house because I'm a bit of an Elvis
fan.
Was that
gorgeous?
That was great.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
not,
I'd love that.
Not exactly what you think, but it's great.
Oh, is it tacky?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But that's fine. But then, you know, when you go to the 70s Elvis, it was tacky. But it's great. And it's a cultural icon. It's great fun. And they've bought the land across the road and they've built the Elvis Presley Plaza. So when you arrive into the Elvis Presley Plaza. The house is across the road. It's about 10 miles or 15 miles outside of Memphis. And you go in, you buy a ticket. Now, you can buy a ticket just to see the house, or you can buy a ticket to see the museum where the cars and the boats and the planes and the costumes. And so of course, you buy the multiple ticket. And there's a diner there. And there's a shop there. And then you get into a little bus and it drives across the road. Now, I mean, it drives across the road. The gates open, it drives up, and you get out at the door of Graceland. So you can't walk up the driveway.
Why?
You have to. Just the way they control
it. Oh, you're not allowed, okay.
You control the numbers going in. You get in and then you put on your headphones and it's an audio tour unless you go in the evening time and there's special tours, but it's an audio tour, and that brings you around the house. You don't get to see much of the house, you get to see more of the squash court and his father's office and the outside gardens, the Garden of Remembrance. The,
and does that all belong to the family that is the Presley still?
It belongs to the Elvis Presley Enterprises, which is ultimately owned by the family. But it's an audio tour, and you so the lady who opens the door, the man dressed as a park ranger, they open the door and then you go in and they say, you turn on, stand at the rail and walk forward, and then it tells you what's this is the jungle room, and then you walk through, but you're out of the house before you know it. You don't get to go upstairs or anything. So you get to see a little bit of the kitchen and out the door. But what they do is they play bits of music in your headphones as you get to the... You're now standing in the squash court. Here are Elvis's gold discs. It's really interesting. But as you get near the end to where Elvis's grave, because he was moved, he was buried in a cemetery, and then because of so much interference, he's actually buried where the swimming pool was, and his mum and dad are there and his twin brother are there as well. And the meditation garden, there's another name on it, but and the swimming pool is still there. And when you arrive, the people bring tributes and paintings and floral stuff, and it's laid out every day. They start playing a song called If I Can Dream in your headphones as you walk up to it. So by the time you get there, people are crying. Everybody's crying. Except one German man who was with us, his tape recorder wasn't working, hadn't a clue what was going on.
Did you cry?
I have to say, God, it was an emotional moment because they build up to it.
Do you remember where you were when you heard that he was dead?
I was only a baby.
Yeah.
I was born in 1972.
I was born in 1970. I was small in the west of Ireland on holidays.
We were in Claverhead on holidays.
My sister was August, bawling, and I kept saying, why are you crying? I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Very sad.
And I was very sad. No, sorry, I got completely lost there. But I was going to say, when you get to Memphis, there's not a whole lot to see in the town itself, unless you go to the outskirts and go on a tour, because it's all convention centres and no restaurants. Anyway, that's a different thing.